and welcome back to the Beyond the Peloton podcast. I'm your host, Spencer Martin, and this is another Vacation Edition podcast. I apologize for the poor sound quality. I am in a RAV4 parked high in the mountains in Colorado, so we are still away from the Beyond the Peloton studio, which I want to make clear is not state-of-the-art. I thought that was a clear joke on a previous podcast. It is recorded in a very primitive setting normally, but I think it sounds okay. So on to the racing. We had a crazy weekend of racing with the Critérium du Dauphiné and the Giro di Lombardia. The Lombardia was a single day classic in the Lombardy region of Italy around Lake Como. And it was won by Jakob Fuglsang from the Astana team, who I believe was a plus 500 favorite to win. Remco Evenepoel crashed out. Kind of tragically, he went over a bridge and suffered a broken pelvis, which is a bummer. He was riding really well. He's a young 20-year-old, like, complete stud. I thought he was going to have a good overall ride at the Giro d'Italia, but it's unclear when he'll be back, and it's sad to see that. It was kind of one of the most exciting, like, storylines of the year, just to see how far he could, you know, how far he could take that domination. And then we also had the Critérium du Dauphiné, which was a five-day stage race prep for the Tour de France in the south of France. It goes through a lot of the same mountain passes and routes. Won by Danny Martinez from EF. The racing literally blew apart on the final 2 days, but there was a huge crash on stage four on Saturday, and it took out like a good number of our GC contenders for the Tour, so it really muddies the picture there. But before we get into that, I want to say, if you want to support the podcast, you can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/btppod. That helps a lot. And thank you for everyone who's done that. And if you want more information and kind of to dive a little bit deeper into this, you can sign up for our newsletter at beyondthepeloton.substack.com. There's a lot of good stuff in there. And there may be some expanded Tour de France coverage. I think like Tour de France, Giro d'Italia, Vuelta a España coverage coming out, maybe a daily newsletter to go along with those races. So sign up for that and you can really dive deep into pro cycling with that. So let's touch on just Lombardy first. I think that was it's funny to say, it was a pretty good race, but it was the least exciting of the two and is the least impactful of the upcoming Tour de France, which is what we're going to be focusing on, the kind of fully focusing on for the next few weeks. There's a couple small races. There's like the European Road Championships next weekend. There's a race in the Emilia-Romagna region of Italy, I believe tomorrow. It's a pretty good race, but it's normally kind of in a better spot. It's just totally buried. There's like a few Belgian semi-classics. I think they're just trying to cram way too much in here. So we're just going to focus fully on the upcoming Tour. So if something crazy happens in those races or I see performances I think will be pertinent in the Tour, I'll bring them up. But we're not going to be doing previews or betting previews or betting odds analysis for any of that. So Lombardy, there was a big climb, 50K from the finish, the Muro di Sormano. It's about 50K from the finish. It is steep. And that, I think it's normally in October. It was in August this year. I think the heat made it a little bit tougher and played a role in how much that race broke apart. So at 50K to go, we had six riders just kind of ride off the front of a reduced peloton on that climb. I don't have my notes in front of me, stupidly. But it was Jakob Fuglsang, George Bennett, Alexander Vlaskov, who I said to look out for, and I said he wouldn't win it, and he didn't win it. Bocco Mellema, Giulio Ciccone, Vincenzo Nibali. So those were, and Remco Evenepoel. So they were, they kind of formed the separation on that steep climb. I tipped Max Shackman. I thought he'd be an interesting pick at plus 2,500. It was just a little bit too steep for him. He couldn't quite hang with him. And then he was chasing like for 50K at pretty much solo. He did a great job. He was strong, but yeah, once you get distance on something like that, that far from the finish, you're just like in purgatory. You're not going to catch the leaders. So you're just hanging on for dear life, trying to hold on, you know, trying to catch them. You're not going to catch them, but maybe you can get a top 10. And also, Matthew Vanderpool, who's a pretty big rider. I was surprised that he even did this well, but he got distance on that steep climb. And then the GPS said he got within 15 seconds of the leaders. I tend to think that's not right, because then he was like back out to a minute and a half. But that was the problem, is with a course like this, with it's so punishing. You get behind on one climb and then you go really deep to catch the leaders. So let's even say you catch them. The next time you hit the next climb, like you're totally pegged, and they've had a much easier time than you, and then you get dropped, and you know, it's just repeat, rinse and repeat for climb after climb. It's you've really got to be in the front. Like, you have to be in the front selection on these climbs if you want to win these races. So it ended up being a showdown between the Trek Segafredo had three riders. After Remco crashed, there was six riders in that break, and or I guess it was kind of the main peloton, the front group. And Trek had three of them, so you're like, oh wow, maybe they'll win this. And no, they just didn't have the legs. But Nibali was probably the weakest of those three. Mollema and Ciccone were pretty strong, but they got distanced by Fuglsang, Bennett, and Vlaskov. Bennett was in trouble because there was two Astana guys, Fuglsang and Vlaskov. And on the final climb before the descent to the finish, Fuglsang he was so confident. He probably knew he could do this the whole time. He just dropped Bennett, soloed over the top, down the descent, and won the race. Great race. He seems like a really nice guy. I personally like him, but he did have this. There was an issue where there was a private investigative firm hired by cycling anti-doping authorities in February. And then in February, it came out that this report said he was working with Michele Ferrari, who's a banned doping doctor. He famously doped Lance Armstrong to 7 Tour de France titles. It kind of got covered up, and then it was leaked. We only found out because the whistleblower within the authority leaked it out because they were upset it got covered up. So he's kind of stuck in this weird limbo where it's like, well, what happened there? Like, that report didn't come out of thin air. So I don't think the UCI is doing him any favors by just saying like, well, they didn't submit it to us for discipline, so we can't do anything. So that needs to be cleared up. Because either he's innocent and then there's this shadow over all of his victories forever, or he's cheating and winning while doped. So that wouldn't be good either. And it also doesn't help. I don't think he won a race between the ages of like 26 and 31, which would be your prime winning years. And then now he's like 35. Like, I think ages 33, 34, 35 have been the best 3 years of his career. So that's also a little, you don't want to. It's not like guilt by age association. You don't want to say, oh, they're old and they're winning, so they're doping. But it doesn't, combined with this report, which was reportedly pretty damning and then was hidden from view, it doesn't sit that well. And like, if you just go on Twitter whenever he's winning, it's definitely haunting him and people aren't totally taking him seriously as a racer. So it'd be nice to see that cleared up. But it's always nice to see nice guys win. He seems like a really good guy. It was an impressive performance. It was clouded slightly with that. So to the Dauphiné. So I said this is normally, this is normally indicative of the Tour de France and how that's going to go. If we just like go back to the, if we assume this since the emergence of Team Sky, now Team Ineos, and count that as the modern era, starting with Bradley Wiggins' Tour de France victory in 2012. So in 2012, Wiggins wins the Dauphiné. So Sky's whole ethos was, if you want to win the Tour, you got to practice winning the Tour. There's no better way to practice winning the Tour than winning these run-up races, literally put on by the same organizer, over a lot of the same roads. And this Dauphiné is even more indicative of Tour success because it's a week closer. Like right now, we're less than 2 weeks away from the start of the Tour de France. And we have mountain stages right from the beginning. Normally, you don't have a mountain stage until like stage 7 or 8. So not only are we closer this year, we're closer to real, real racing stages than we normally are. So just keep that in mind. In 2012, Bradley Wiggins wins the Tour de France, but before that, he won the Dauphiné Libéré 3 weeks before. 2013, Chris Froome wins the Tour de France. He won the Dauphiné Libéré 3 weeks before. 2014, Vincenzo Nibali wins the Tour de France 3 weeks before. He's seventh at the Dauphiné Libéré. 2015, Chris Froome wins the Tour de France 3 weeks before he wins the Dauphiné. 2016, same thing. Chris Froome wins the Tour 3 weeks before he won the Dauphiné. 2017, this is the only year Froome didn't win the Dauphiné and he won the Tour, but he was fourth at it, so pretty good finish. 2018, Geraint Thomas, on the same team, Team Sky, won the Tour de France, won the Dauphiné 3 weeks before. 2019, Egan Bernal, on Team Ineos at this point, same organization though, he wins the Tour de France, and then 2 weeks before the Tour, he won the Tour de Switzerland. So there's a clear correlation here between success at these run-up races and success at the Tour de France. So, now flash forward to the end of this year's Dauphiné Libéré. Ineos was awful. They were completely terrible. They had Pavel Sivakov, who saved the day. He almost won the stage yesterday. But Egan Bernal, he was seventh overall. He was about 35 seconds back from Primoz Roglic. Drops out of the race prior to stage four, citing vague back issues. But then he's seen training later in the day. So it's unclear what happened there. I mean, this is highly unusual. I don't think I've ever seen this happen. I would guess, if I'm purely speculating here, it's three things. It's either a positive COVID test and he had to leave the race, positive doping test and he had to leave the race. That's unlikely though, because then how does that play out in a few weeks? He's just not at the Tour de France. So, or he got mad at the team because, I mean, you could tell on stage three, he was pretty upset with kind of their lackluster performance. He probably thinks, I mean, this is me speculating. He probably thinks, well, Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome, a bunch of old farts. They've won the Tour. They think they're going to win this year, and they're not supporting me in this race. They're literally 30 minutes behind every stage. Like, screw this. I'm going home. Like, this sucks. I mean, to me, that's the most likely thing, because this is key training, and there's no better training than racing. So you're telling me he just like, oh, my back hurts, I'm going to drop out. And his director sportif or coach, manager, Gabriel Rash, said, oh, the most important thing now is for him to rest before the Tour. Well, then, no, that's not true at all. Like, the most important thing is for him to get in shape. He's clearly not in Tour de France winning shape, so he needs to get in better shape. And then you're telling me he's just not racing? Like, it literally makes no sense. So he drops out. He looked okay. You know, let's say he finishes seventh overall in this race. Things were so crazy on that final stage. You know, maybe he could have finished on the podium. Maybe he could have won. But you can salvage that. We see Vincenzo Nibali finish seventh of this race in 2014 and went on to win the Tour. So there was no need to press the panic button for him before the dropout. After the dropout, I mean, if his back is really that hurt this close to the Tour, he's not going to win. It just can't happen. You can't recover quickly enough. And combine that with now the missed, these key, like, pointy training / racing days. These are key to bank before going into the Tour. Because then once you're a week out, you're not really training. You know, now is when the final bit of hay is being put in the barn. And to miss that is that is huge. You know, I don't like that at all. So, and then we have Pavel Sivakov, who actually looked fantastic. He lost a ton of time on one stage because he was doing teamwork. You know, I would be picking him to be Ineos's leader, but he had a really bad crash. He had a really bad crash yesterday on the final stage on the descent. I'll post a GIF of that in the newsletter. He went on and he almost won the stage, but that really takes it out of you. And then Chris Froome and Geraint Thomas were just like literally in the gruppetto most days, finishing like almost last. Like, they were finishing right before the people who are getting cut for not making the time cut. And even their director sportif, Gabriel Rash, called them out in the press saying that they need to step up and need to be better. It's like, well, yeah, no shit. Like, they're terrible. Like, there's no, to me, if we're just like looking at the historical evidence of like, can you be that bad and win the Tour de France? You can't. Like, there's no way to do it. And then you have like Daniel Benson on Cycling News writing this morning saying like, oh, you'd have to be a fool to write them off. Or it's like, well, this is kind of why I started the podcast and newsletter. There's this like systemic issue in cycling journalism to just like, no one wants to be wrong, where it's like, well, we have a clear issue here. There's a clear problem with Ineos currently, and there's going to be a problem at the Tour, and no one will say it because they don't want to be wrong. They want to be the person who wrote them off and they won. where, you know, I'm not writing off the whole team. I think Bernal, you know, it's an outside shot. I think he could still win. You know, if Sivakov is healthy, I actually think he's the one, you know, you're looking at Bernal and Sivakov is really the only potential tour winners coming out of that team. But when people like Daniel Benson say, I mean, he's an esteemed journalist. He said, this could be part of the Brailsford-Carriston master plan, in which we arrive in the third week of the tour and Bernal's back ailments and tired limbs have been replaced with stripped down, lean and perfectly with a perfectly in tune athlete. I mean, to me, he's just saying there, well, they could, maybe they're just going to dope a ton before the third week of the tour. It's like, well, either say that or don't say that. You know, you're kind of misleading your readers by letting them think riders could just naturally progress throughout a Tour de France. That doesn't really happen. I mean, you kind of have this idea of like, oh, well, like let's say in the 2018 Giro, Froome rode into shape. It's, to me, like Froome degraded less than the competition. Like if you're not in shape on day one, you're not going to be in shape on day 17. Like you can just manage your decline is the only thing. So it's like, you've got to have the form to even be in contention to win. And they don't have, they simply don't have it. Froome and Thomas are terrible right now. So that's enough on Ineos for the moment. Let's go over to Team Jumbo-Visma, who was dominating this race through the first four stages. They won stage one with Wout van Aert, their domestique, who's on fire. Stage two was won by Primoz Roglic, who just rode away from everyone. Super impressive. They didn't win stage three. That was won by, actually, I want to note this guy. Really interesting find here. I mean, the team he's on, Bora Hansgrohe, they tend to do this. They just have like an army of kind of anonymous German riders who are just like popping out of the woodwork. So it was won by, actually, so stage three was won by David Formolo. Roglic gets second, defends his lead. Stage four is won by Leonard Kamna on Bora Hansgrohe, who had their two best GC riders crash out on that same day. One, Max Schachmann, was hit by a car at Tour Giro de Lombardia, like 3K from the finish, while he was riding to a top 10, and it broke his collarbone by a random car on the course, which sucks and is completely ridiculous that that happened. And then Emmanuel Buchmann got caught up in a big crash on a descent at the Dauphiné on stage four, which also took out Steven Kruijswijk. Primoz Roglic crashed. So they have two of their best GC riders out, which is great. Actually, the big winner here is Peter Sagan, who the team will now have to focus just on stage wins in the green jersey for him. But they also get the emergence of this young, let's see how old he is. I think he's in his early 20s. He's 23 years old. I'd keep an eye. I think they're going to have to take him to the Tour de France now because they just had two key guys get knocked out. He was very impressive, and he almost won the final stage, stage five. So, Primoz Roglic crashes, defends his lead. He's in the team car at one point on stage four, gets back on his bike, defends his lead. I also remember I said this was like a can't lose bet, so I have money on him to win the overall. So I'm thinking, this isn't great, but, you know, he's still in the race. Overnight, it's announced, well, he's leaving the race. So that's terrible. And you rarely see riders leave races while winning. So I was thinking initially, like, oh, he must have a broken bone or a severe concussion. That's the only reason you would leave. I guess, I mean, his team manager, Richard Ploeg, came out this morning and said he didn't have a concussion or any broken bones, and he was going to race the Tour de France. So that's good, but it really complicates our prediction and betting picture for the tour, and we'll get into that in a second. But so, and Steven Kruijswijk, who is their second best bet for the tour, you know, going into this week, he dislocates his shoulder. So it's unlikely he's going to race the tour. So you're thinking, oh, wow, this team is done. Their two best riders in this race are out. No, they go into stage five, and Sepp Kuss, the American domestique who's been riding incredibly well in the front, says, you know, let's blow this race up and I'm going to win this stage. So they have Wout van Aert on the front early. They completely blow the race up. And it was interesting because these young riders responded better to this than the old established riders, because like Nairo Quintana was 30 seconds back from the lead. So he could win the stage, or he could win the race overall. Thibaut Pinot was in the lead after Roglic dropped out. So, and you have these established riders and Richie Porte was up there. Like, they should know this is coming. Like, this isn't a surprise. As soon as you see Van Aert on the front, you know Jumbo-Visma is like coming out swinging. They're not going to let these injuries, you know, diminish their spirit. And they just are totally caught out. Like they missed a move. Tadej Pogačar goes up the road, who was in, before this stage, he was in 9th overall, but just over a minute back. They let Danny Martinez get up there, who's only 26 seconds back from the lead. And Miguel Angel Lopez, who's 32 seconds back. It's completely ridiculous. They let this group get up the road. And then, you know, Thibaut, the last 20 kilometers, he's doing this dramatic chase, and we're all loving it on TV, and all the French riders who aren't even on his team are working for him. And it's just like, oh, wow, he's in such good shape. He's going to win the Tour. It's like, I love Thibaut more than anyone, but, like, this is indicative of, like, why he struggles so much. It's like, he didn't have the awareness or, and key point, a strong enough team to control this race early on in the stage. And then he's caught out. And, you know, he only had to close like a 30-second gap. He lost the race by like 31 seconds overall to Danny Martinez. You know, he should have been able to close that. Like every time they flashed to him, it looked like he was sprinting. And then it looked like Martinez was like slow pedaling. And Martinez was just holding the gap. So, you know, that's not the best sign to me that A, tactically, he got duped like that. And B, he couldn't, you know, just close that bit of gap down with a lot of help. He had a lot of help from like Julian Alaphilippe, who, by the way, struggled early in the Dauphiné and people were writing him off. I think he was just tired from that, you know, super explosive effort at Milano-San Remo to break the race apart on the Poggio. He got dropped really, really hard the first couple mountain stages, which makes sense if you've went that deep and you're racing just a few days later. He looked good the last couple mountain stages. He's not going to win the Tour. I mean, he just can't, especially this Tour. He really leaned on that TT performance last year to stay in it. But, you know, he could be like a top, sneaky top 10, and he could do a lot of damage in a lot of these, you know, medium mountain stages. And I could see him winning a few stages. He looked quite strong. But all these French riders were working for Thibaut, and he still can't close the gap. And it's like, this is like the fundamental problem with Thibaut. So, yeah, if anything, I came away from this final stage, you know, just utterly confused. So normally we come out of the Dauphiné with a pretty clear picture of who our Tour winner is going to be. Usually it's the winner or someone in the top five. I'm really confused. So Danny Martinez won the race overall, but he is absolutely, I looked through his results, he has no pedigree whatsoever at riding well in the mountains in a 3-week stage race. He, like most of his best results in Grand Tour so far have been time trials. He got 10th in the Vuelta a España time trial last year. It's just a pretty good result. But I don't know. Normally I'd say like, yeah, let's bet on this guy. Let's ride him to the win at the Tour. But that's, you know, when there's no indication whatsoever that he's a 3-week stage racer, that I don't like that at all. And then we have Tadej Pogačar, who was struggling. I was a little disappointed with his performance all week, but he looked pretty good. You know, he almost won that final stage. He almost won the overall. He didn't quite have enough, but, you know, that's the type of form where you think, you know, he's right there. He finished 4th overall, which is where Froome finished in 2017 and went on to win the Tour. And you could imagine him just kind of building on that form a little bit and being good at the Tour. But I'm still just a little concerned with the lack of form I saw from him all week. So the obvious answer here is Sepp. The obvious question is Sepp Kuss is on the strongest team in the world right now, Jumbo-Visma. And he appears to be the strongest rider in the world. Is he going to win the Tour de France? I mean, it seems ridiculous to imagine. I wouldn't have even considered the idea a week ago. He looked incredible all week. The only reason he didn't win the overall is because he was doing teamwork and losing time in the final kilometers after, you know, pulling like an animal. He's not a great time trialist. There's only one time trial. He could lose the race in that. Let's say he's riding well all Tour. There's the stage 20 time trial. It is uphill for half of it, or half of the time will be spent going uphill. I think he could, you know, that could be really rough for him the first half of that stage, though, and he could lose a lot of time. And then additionally, we did have the like reemergence of Tom Dumoulin, also on Jumbo-Visma. This team has an embarrassment of riches. He looked, you know, he was riding pretty strong the first couple stages. He looked really strong yesterday on stage 5 when the race blew apart. He actually dropped Thibaut Pinot pretty hard. coming into the line. So, you know, to me, he comes out of this. I love Roglic. Roglic's form was incredible. I worry a little bit about the crash. Tom Dumoulin to me is like the sneaky big winner of the Dauphiné, as it projects for the Tour de France. So I remember I bet on Tom Dumoulin like 11 months ago to win the Tour. It was like at like a plus 500 odds. Thought it was amazing. He has all these problems after that. He's back out to, let's look at the betting odds right now. He's back out. He's at plus 1600 on BetMGM. But if you go over to MyBookie, who I don't recommend betting with at all, don't do it. I've like have a bunch of winnings stuck in their accounts and I can't get them to pay me. But I just think the boards are interesting. He's at plus 1000. And there's a lag here between the odds makers and the real life situation. So like Egan Bernal on my bookie is plus 250, but you know, he just dropped out of the biggest preparation race with a back issue and didn't look that strong. So to say he's the odds on favorite is ridiculous. Chris Froome is still second at plus 500. The guy was finishing with the sprinters on every mountain stage. Thibaut Pinot plus 800, that's about right. Geraint Thomas plus 700. Geraint Thomas looked terrible. He's not going to win the Tour. That's ridiculous, he's that high. Primoz Roglic plus 500, that's about right. Julian Alaphilippe plus 18, no, he's not going to win, but you know, that's interesting. Emmanuel Bookman, now I don't even think he's going to start. He was one of the riders that crashed for Bora, plus 2,500. Nairo Quintana. Quintana, I want to mention, he dropped out of the final stage with knee issues. I would imagine that was suffered when he was hit by a car training in June. So, yeah, that's not great. You know, his form looked okay, but if he has knee problems right now, it's not going to go well when he's 20 days into racing the Tour de France. So we have a lot of it's just like a lot of questions. Like, I don't know. And then let's go back over to BetMGM, which is the I would recommend betting with them if you're going to bet. Primoz Roglic is plus 150 favorite. So that's like a sure thing. You'd want to be very sure he's going to win to take those odds. And to me, it's a little dicey. Like, you know, Lance Armstrong crashed in this race, the Dauphiné, in 2003. It was just road rash, wasn't any structural injuries. And he said that really hurt him for the Tour. Like, he didn't feel right on the bike. You know, it takes a lot out of your body. Your body's working hard to grow new skin, and then it can take a lot out of you. You can just be not the same rider for a couple weeks. So it's a big concern. You know, it's like just people are saying, oh, it's just road rash. Same thing with Sivakov. It can really, really bite you a couple weeks later. You get an immediate adrenaline rush. So both of them in their days of their respective crashes had great rides after the crash. But that wears off after a day or two, and then you're just kind of like in a hole, and you're digging yourself out of this hole. Your body's, you know, has burns on it, and you're regrowing skin. That's a big concern to me. I don't love him at plus 150 right now. Bernal is actually at plus 275, which is a little crazy. Tom Dumoulin's at plus 600. That's a little, to me, a little more correct. To me, he's got to be, if we're just looking at this week, he's the favorite at the Tour of France. It's a crazy thing to say. I would not have imagined last week I would be saying that. That he's my Tour de France favorite to win the race. And then we have like Geraint, Tadej Pogacar plus 1200. That's a little, you know, that's okay. Pogacar, I am a little less enthusiastic about Pogacar after this Dauphiné Libéré or Critérium du Dauphiné than I was before. But he didn't totally lay an egg. And he had a good final stage. So that's a little more reassuring. And then we just like the traditional favorite. So traditional favorites, like the French hopes, like Romain Bardet, like now, like if like that, if he could, like that final stage was perfect for him to kind of blitz Thibaut Pinot and the other guys up there in the overall. And he didn't do it. He got caught out. I don't like that at all. Warren Barguil, same thing. He should have been up there with the young guys. Guillaume Martin, no, he's not going to win the Tour. He got third at the Dauphiné. Actually, I love that performance. I think he's like a sneaky top 10. I would, you know, maybe even a sneaky, sneaky podium. That'd be kind of an interesting bet for the podium, if you can find a book that will take that. And I tried to bet Sepp Kuss to win the Tour yesterday. I couldn't find a sports book to take that bet. You know, I was going to put like $5 on him. I bet you could get a return of like $55,000 or maybe even $10,000 if he won it. And it's, and you know, it's a little weird to me. He looks like he is the strongest rider in the world at the moment, taking out his teammate Primoz Roglic, who, you know, if they raced this morning, Sepp Kuss would win. It's a little weird to me. That's kind of, you know, I would just keep your ear to the ground about some, like, you know, the first couple stages of the tour. Sepp could be, it sounds insane to say. I never thought an American would win the Tour de France again. I know, I'm feeling it. I got Sepp fever. It might just be because he's a Boulder guy. That's where I live. Maybe I'm biased, but if things get weird at Jumbo, keep an eye out for him to be their mid-race leader. And at Valverde, yeah, I didn't see anything I loved from like Alejandro Valverde. I'm feeling no confidence about him. Richie Porte, feeling no confidence. Adam Yates, he's 18 minutes back in the GC. That's really bad. Mikel Landa, 19 minutes back. I don't know what is going on with these guys, but you know, maybe it's just this year is just like a transitional year, and it's a change in the guard, and these new guys are coming in, and the old guys just can't. Maybe there's just a step behind. Enric Mas, a Movistar, he was supposed to be a contender. He's 22 minutes back in the overall. So, oh, and one thing to note is no Ineos rider in the top 10 of this race, which hasn't happened since 2010, their first year in existence. So they've had a rider in the top 10 of this race every year since 2010, and they've got nothing. The goose egg. And then you still have journalists saying, well, I don't know. Well, yeah, we do know. We have a pretty clear picture that they're terrible, and they're going to continue to be terrible at the Tour de France. Unless, I mean, if they're suddenly good at the Tour, something is rotten in the state of Denmark. I don't want to go as far to accuse them of doping heavily between now and the Tour, but that, I think that's what it would take. It would take a massive doping program to get back where they need to be. I mean, it maybe even more than that. So, yeah, it would be highly suspicious to me if they were flying at the Tour. And it drives me crazy, this idea that, oh, they're riding for the third week. Well, that's literally never been their MO, and they've always won the Tour in the first week or 2 weeks and then defeated in the third week. And then to think, well, now, the master plan is they're laying low, they're playing possum, they're going to lose 30 minutes in the first 2 weeks of the Tour, and then they're going to surprise everyone in the third week. It's not going to happen. It's just like, it's maddening. These are professional cycling journalists who can't see, like, they can't see, read the tea leaves. It's not even tea leaves. It's like they can't read the billboards on the side of the road telling them what's going to happen. It's really, really maddening to me. And also another thing to note is, this idea that the Tour is won in the third week has really plagued teams like Movistar. If you remember 2016, it was the end of the first week. There was a stage to Andorra, and the final climb wasn't too tough. It was like a graded out but long climb. The penultimate climb of the day was really steep and really hard. Movistar had riders in the break. Quintana had Froome on the ropes. Froome was not riding well in that second to last climb, and they didn't attack because they were saying, oh, you know, we're all in for the third week. Well, why? What? I fail to see that wisdom, because time taken on stage six is no less important than time taken on stage 17. There's this obsession with taking time on the backside of the Tour, and that somehow that you can win, you can make up 3 minutes in the final two stages. You really cannot. There's really no evidence of that happening post 2012. I mean, Sky and Ineos have really changed the way this race has been raced. I think a lot of teams have struggled to adapt to that. Jumbo knows what's up. They're going in strong. They're going to punch them in the mouth in the first seven stages and make them play offense, and while they're playing defense. That's the Ineos playbook. And Ineos is now stuck doing what these teams like Movistar and AG2R have had to do against them, where it's like, well, okay, we're going to lose time early, but you know, we're going to our tactical acumen, and we're going to blitz them in the Massif Central because the roads are hard to ride on. It's crazy that just the same story is written over and over again of like, well, AG2R is going to attack to tackle him. It's chip seal, so Sky will have a hard time keeping up. It's like, you know, I think we're all just delusional trying to convince ourselves that, you know, it's 1940 and that you can come back from 10 minutes down at the Tour de France. No, this race is you come in strong, you hit them in the mouth, and you make everyone else play offense while you play defense. That's how you win this race. And that's exactly what Jumbo is going to do. I mean, if Roglic can recover, it's going to be really hard to beat him. And if Roglic doesn't, I mean, we have a clear and less clear picture of the GC where, you know, if we just look at the odds boards, Roglic, you know, he's a bit of a wild card. Bernal, I'm not that confident about Bernal. Dumoulin, love Dumoulin. Pino, I can tell you right now, he's not going to win the Tour. Tadej Pogacar, probably not going to win the Tour. Geraint Thomas, not going to win the Tour. Emmanuel Buchmann, not going to win the Tour. Nairo Quintana, not going to win the Tour. Chris Froome, not going to win the Tour. Julian Alaphilippe, not going to win the Tour. Mikel Landa, not going to win the Tour. Miguel Landa Lopez, not going to win the Tour. Steven Kruijswijk, probably won't even be at the Tour. Richie Porte, not going to win. Adam Yates, not going to win. So who are we left with here? Rigoberto Urán, not going to win. He was terrible at the Dauphiné. Sivakov, he could win, you know. So we have like three riders in this top 15 slots who could potentially win this race. So I came into this podcast thinking the picture was chaos. Now I'm leaving thinking, well, maybe it's a little more clear than I previously thought. So the next couple of weeks, I might be releasing more than one episode per week, and I might even be going through and breaking down specific stages where I think that I think will be important in the Tour. We're all Tour de France at this point forward. We're going to be doing some previews. I might even select like a fantasy, like a Tour de France fantasy league, and you know, listeners can enter that. And we can all play each other, and I'll be doing quite a few podcasts during the Tour as well. So, stay tuned in. It's going to be an exciting few weeks. I'm very excited for the run up to this, and then the possible mayhem at the Tour de France. And rate and review the show on iTunes if you like it, and make sure to share it with others if you think they would enjoy it. So, and check out the newsletter at beyondthepeloton.substack.com. All right, have a great week, and I'll be speaking to you soon. Bye.